Okay, Parsha Shlach. Rabbi Bechai begins the Parsha with the Pasuk in Mishnah in Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Laman Aleph. It says, Sus Muchan Liyom Milchama, V'la Hashem Atshua. That the horse is ready for the day of war, but to Hashem is salvation. So Rabbi Bechai explains, what that Pasuk is teaching us is that a person is supposed to do Hishtadlos. A person is supposed to put in their Hishtadlos to whatever they'd like to get. If they want to be rich, they have to put in. They can't just sit back and wait for money to flow into the bank account. They have to try to get a job. If they're going to war, they have to get the horses ready. They have to get the army ready, the strategy. All the regular hishtadlos that a person should need to do, b'derech hateva, a person must do, because the Torah is never so mechal an eis. And therefore, a person has to do everything. If they want a certain outcome, they have to put in all the efforts to make it, all the normal efforts to make it possible. But after a person works really hard to apply for the job and to write the perfect resume and whatever, does everything they can, at the end of the day, they have to know that it's only LaHashem Atshua. Their success, the Hishtadlus, is just something they need to do, but it's Hashem who gives success. That is to say, let's say you're going to war, right? Even if you put in the best plans, it's still people with good plans. Their armies get destroyed sometimes. Or if somebody has the best resume or the best whatever it is, the best plans to make money, it doesn't work out. And some people who plans shouldn't have worked out, they end up working out. So the point is that everyone has to do their hishtadlus, but knowing that Hashem Atshua, everything comes from Hashem. Okay, and that's how we get into the story of the Meraglim, which is, of course, that the Meraglim were sent, that was the Hishtadlus, to check out Eretz Yisrael, even though they knew Hashem was going to win the wars for them, they had to do their Hishtadlus to send out spies. That's how Rabbi Bechai begins. And so he says, Shlach Lecha, we know Rashi's pirush on that is that Hashem was not so, did not, perhaps, I guess, think that Hishtadlus was appropriate, or maybe the way it was done, but Rabbi Bechai, as we said, begins the story by saying that it was, the general idea was appropriate. But he has an interesting pshat from the Re Balatosos. Yeah, I hope you're sitting down for this. Shlach Lecha means send for you, Moshe, that this was good for Moshe, because this sending of the Meraglim, and the Meraglim came back and said Lashon Hara, and that made it that the Jews couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael for another 40 years. That was good for Moshe, because Moshe, it was already nigzar on him that he wasn't going to go into Israel. If you remember, back in Shmos, it's brought in Rashi, that, remember, Moshe questioned Hashem, so to speak, handling, you know, he asked, I was sent to save the Jews, and everything went south. And Hashem says to him, oh, you're questioning me? Ata sira asher esel lefaro, which means that, you'll see my salvation now, but you won't get into Eretz Yisrael. You won't see my war with the Shiva Umos because you questioned me. So right there, this is brought in Rashi, right there, it was nigzar Moshe to not go into Eretz Yisrael. So it comes out, therefore, that any delay of going into Israel is good for Moshe. Moshe lived another 40 years. So that's why it's Shlach Lecha, good for you. That's the pshat that's brought from the Riatosis by Rabbeinu Bechai. Keep that in mind, because we're going to come back to it later. Now, Rabbeinu Bechai asks, it's an interesting question, why is it that in the list of the 12 people that were sent, the 12 Meraglim, it doesn't put Kalev and Yeshua next to each other? So he says, I'm not... not clear to me why they needed to be next to each other, but he asked why they weren't put next to each other. And he says it's because it wanted to show you that that Kalev was surrounded by other Meraglim, meaning to say Kalev embedded himself. He was undercover. You know, he made it like he was on everybody else's team, when in fact, of course, he was coming to save the day. That's why he had to be separate from Yehoshua. Yehoshua was separate. He said, this is terrible, but Kalev was surrounded by the other Meraglim. Okay, then we have, it says, Lamate Yosef, Lamate Menashe. Why does it mention Lamate Yosef, Lamate Menashe, not just Lamate Menashe? So Rabbeinu Bechai says that's because it's mentioning Yosef, because Yosef also spoke Lashon Hara. So that's why it gets placed here as well. I don't have it in front of me. My recollection is that Targum Yonason says the same thing, but if he doesn't, okay. Anyway, Rabbeinu Bachai says that Matei Yosef is in there because of Yosef also speaking Lashon Hara. Okay, so the 12 tribes go, 12 spies go, and they cut off this Zmora. Vayisa'uhu bamot bishnayim. It says they carried it bamot bishnayim. So now Rashi says that means that they had to carry with two sticks because they needed eight guys altogether to carry this Eshkol Shalanovim. So you had four guys carrying each of the two sticks. So that's Vayisa'uhu bamot bishnayim. So we had the 10, according to Rashi, the 10 spies carried fruit back because it was all to say Lashon Hara. So therefore, the Shnaim is the two motos, four guys on each mote. And then one carried a Rimon, and one carried a Te'ena. And Yoshua and Kalev took nothing. That's Rashi. The Rebbeinu Bachai brings a Zohar that just the opposite. That only Kalev and Yoshua brought back that. And that's why it says, Vayisa'uhu bamot bishnayim. Only two could bring it back. Kalev and Yehoshua were the only ones that could bring it back. The Zohar brings a story that sounds lahavda like the story of King Arthur, that all the other 10 spies tried to pick it up. They couldn't. Only Kalev and Yehoshua could pick it up. And that was a remiss to them that only they would get a chilek in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, then we have the Bnei Yisrael hearing about this and starting to cry, and because they cried that night, that night was Nikva as a Bechiah L'Doros. That was the night of Tisha B'Av, and that was Gzera, that they would always be crying on that night. So we know, Rebbeinu Bachai points out, that both Batei Mikdash were destroyed on Tisha B'Av, but he says it was destroyed on the night of Tisha B'Av. So the beginning of it was started at the night of Tisha B'Av. It was at night. Also, if you remember, there's a famous kinnah about this. I don't remember the kinnah quite going this way, but there's a story in the kinnos of these Jews that were captured by Titus, and they were going to be sold for znus, for moral purposes. And it was young men and women, 400 of them, and they weren't sure what they should do. And they got a nevuah that it was okay for them to commit suicide, something like that. So they made a kal v'chomer from something, they jumped overboard to not go to do znus. They were being shipped for znus, so they jumped overboard and killed themselves. And that's one of the kinnos on Tisha B'Av about those 400 people. I don't know if the kinnah mentioned this, because I don't have it with me, but the Rebbeinu Bachai says these were, in the camp of Titus, there were Yishma'ilim va'aravim. Okay? They were being sold to them. The Chazal generally associated them with znus. So they were being sold to them, and he says that happened that night too, that they were shipped on a boat and jumped overboard. That was also at night. So he says it was a night of crying for generations. What's really amazing here to me, Rebbeinu Bachai points this out, not that he's amazed by it, but he points it out, but what is amazing is this terrible destruction that was decreed on the Bnei Yisrael. They shouldn't go into Eretz Yisrael, and then all the Batei Mikdash, and it's a night of crying and all this. No one actually, no one did anything. It was the crying. They were upset when they heard. They didn't trust in Hashem. So the Merida b'Hashem, this rebellion, was all in their hearts, that they didn't trust in Hashem. But apparently that was enough. That was for this terrible decree. I assume that was just showed where their heart was. But it's an amazing thing to think about, that what you think matters. Your belief in Hashem, your attachment to Hashem, matters, and here it mattered a lot. Anyway, Yehoshua tries to convince them, both of them are trying to convince the Jews that they shouldn't be afraid of conquering Eretz Yisrael, and they say, Ach b'Hashem al timrodu, don't rebel against Hashem, atem al tiru es am ha'aretz, don't be afraid of the nation there. Ki lachmenu heim, they are our bread, that's what it says. Pashup Shad is, we're going to destroy them, we're going to eat them. Sar tzila me'alehem, their shade went away from them. V'Hashem itanu, and Hashem is with us. So that's a lot of stuff. Sar, there was lachmenu heim, we're going to eat them, destroy them. Sar tzilam, their shade is gone. And V'Hashem itanu, Hashem is with us. So the Rebbeinu Bachai explains Sar Tzilam refers to their, similar to Rashi, but not exactly. It refers to their Sar in Shamayim. Their protecting angel, their sar and shamayim, like sar shalaisa, whatever. So the sar of these zayin umos was already knocked down, so there's nothing to be afraid of, because Jewish people are really afraid of their sar. And they're telling them, no, their tzeil, their shade, which is this angel, is gone, and therefore, don't worry about it. So Rabbeinu Bachai asks, he doesn't understand, why did they need that? They had to say, don't be afraid of them, their sar and shamayim is gone. Everyone knew they were walking with like the Anani HaKavod, with the Aron. What do they care if their sar and shamayim is gone or not? Okay, you're with Hashem. Obviously, nobody's going to get in your way when you're walking with the Aron. Like, what were they afraid of? Granted, I don't know if the Anani HaKavod would have gone with them in Eretz Yisrael, but either way, wasn't it obvious that Hashem was with them? Why did they need to hear that their sar and shamayim went down? Didn't they know Hashem was with them, whatever the case was? So he says one possibility is that is what was meant when they said ki lachmenu him sar tzilam, and plus Hashem itano. In other words, even if it wasn't sar tzilam, anyway Hashem is with us. That's one way of understanding it. Another way of understanding it, he says, is that he was referring to the schusim they had. Lachmenu him refers to this, was hinting at the schus of Pesach, that we eat matzah on Pesach. And sar tzilam, the tzeil, was referring to the tzeil sukkah. Then in the schus of those two mitzvos, Hashem itanu, Hashem is with us, Hashem's protection is with us, and we're going to win. Anyway, so the nation doesn't go for it, and Hashem gets upset and says, how long will this nation anger me? Adonai lo ya'aminu bi b'chala otza secher asisi b'kirbo. All these miracles that I did, b'kirbo. So he says, "Bikirbo" means all the miracles I did. Bikirbo, that they were eating the man, and the man they didn't go to the bathroom. So that is one of the nisim that Hashem did. Bikirbo, that they never needed to use the bathrooms. That's in their insides. That's the bikirbo. We have the story in the pasuk in Dvarim about Yosei Tielecha al Azinecha, about how to properly go to the bathroom. So the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Ayin Hey Amud Beis, talks about that and says that was, they would buy food from merchants in the Midbar. So when they ate those, they had to go to the bathroom. But otherwise, the man was completely soaked into them, and they didn't have to use the bathroom. And another opinion there of Lazar Berparta was that even when they, before they sinned, with the complaining about it, when they used to eat, it would, even when they would buy stuff from the Goyim, and they would eat it, they still wouldn't have to go to the bathroom. So that's real nisim asher bekirbo. Hashem would make miracles that they didn't have to go to the bathroom, and still they rebelled against me. So Hashem says in the Midbar, yiplu pigrechem, their bodies will fall. And it says that three times, the word pigrechem. So Rabbeinu Bachai explains that there was three groups. There was, and this is based on the Zohar, one second. First, there were three groups. There was those who cried, the bachu, those who slonenu, those who complained, and those who said, v'nasna rosh, let's go back. And there's, keneged those, there are three times it says, their pigrechem will die in the Midbar. And the Zohar says, the reason it says pigrechem is to let you know that only their pigarim remain in the Midbar, but that their neshamas would come back. In other words, they'll have a chelik olam haba, they'll come back, they're going to go when Tchias Mesim happens, they'll come back with Moshe, who's also obviously not in Eretz Yisrael. So it's just their body that was going to die, but not their neshamas not gone. And Hashem swears about this because Gzar Din says, Ani Hashem Dibarti. So the Rabbeinu Bachai points out something interesting that, this was a Gzar Din that Hashem swore it could not be taken back. But even such a Gzera, where Hashem makes a Gzar Din and he swears on it or whatever, and it cannot be rescinded, it can be pushed off. Because Moshe pushed it off. Moshe, through his davening, pushed it off for 40 years. So he says even those kind of gzeiras can't be rescinded, but they can be delayed. And what's fascinating here is, if you remember what we said at the beginning, that it was good for Moshe, this whole episode, because he got to live an extra 40 years, because he wasn't supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael even before any of these stories with the hitting the rock. So if that's true, and this is really, this whole story is good for him, it was only good for him because he davened. Because according to this, they should have been wiped out right away, and only because Moshe davened was the gzeira pushed off for 40 years, in which case it turns out that it was only good for him because he then davened that made it good for him. It's just an interesting thing that Hashem can set things up for you that they should be good, but you have to capitalize on it. If you're given an opportunity to do a mitzvah, to do it, and it will be good for you. B'zeo baba. Okay, anyway, we go on to the idea of the Mekoshesh. So it says, Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar. And this Mekoshesh, so Rabbeinu Bachai asked the obvious question, why does it say they were in the Midbar and the Mekoshesh came? What in the world does that have to do with being in the Midbar? So, right, it's like extra that they were in the Midbar and they found the Mekoshesh. Well, so the Indian that they were in the Midbar. So he says perhaps it's to show what a terrible Avera it was. Because I could be Mechal Shabbos in the Midbar. You know, you got the Mun, didn't fall, fell Mun, manna from the sky. Fell twice on the sixth day and didn't fall on the Shabbos. You know, you see Gilui Shechina, you see the Mun, you know, Shabbos is in your face. That's from Hashem. And still to be Mechal Shabbos then. And remember, he did it with Hasra. As the Pasuk goes on to say, that Hamotzim Oso, that they brought him Hamotzim Oso. So Rabbeinu Bachai points out Hamotzim Oso. Ve'akriv Oso Hamotzim Oso means they found him, like, presently doing it. Meaning, they warned him, and then they went to bring him because he was still doing it. They warned him. He was like, I don't care. Kept doing it. Right, they had Hasra, and he said he kept on doing it, and that's where they're going to kill him. So with all this, in the Midbar, he still did this Avera. Okay, just Rabbeinu Bachai asks why he's called the Mekoshesh, which he says is usually a term reserved for straw, not for collecting sticks. He has a interesting, I mean, not that I understand it, a Kabbalistic thing. You can look it up yourself. Mekoshesh comes from the village of Mikav Shesh. That's to do with his Chol Shabbos, but again, I don't understand it because I'm not a Kabbalist, unfortunately. So, but you can look it up for yourself if you'd like. Then we go on to the idea of tzitzis. So Rabbeinu Bachai has a really, really long marach here about all the dinei tzitzis and the Kabbalah behind it and the Hashkafa behind it. I'll just talk very quickly about a few things. One is what the word tzitzis means. So there's different possibilities. Tzitzis is milashon tzitzis rosho, like the strands of hair of your head, and that he uses mostly for Kabbalistic explanations. But it also means to see, like to be tzitz is to see, to look. So the pasuk says risim oso, but the idea is not so much the tzitzis are not so much that you should look at them, although of course you need to look at them to have this happen. But the point is to remember you're being looked at. You're supposed to look at the tzitzis and see the tcheles and remember the kisei hakavod and remember Hashem, to remember you are being watched, to not do averos. That's what the tzitzis is, to remind you to do the mitzvahs because you are being seen. That's the meaning of the word tzitzis. And we know that there's this famous gematria, that the gematria of tzitzis is 600, and then with the ksharim and the chutim, we work out to 613, right? There's 5 ksharim and then 8 strings, that's 613. Obviously, as the Rishonim point out, that's not ma'akev, those numbers, that can't be the whole thing, it's just a remez. What's interesting is that remez seems to have a flaw, because the word tzitzis is spelled in the parsha, in Shlach, minus a yud 3 times. Many of the Rishonim asked this, Tosus and Menachos asked this, and the Ramban, and Rabbeinu Bachai here gives the same answer as Tosus and Menachos, that it says, Vayalachem litzitzis, so even though you're missing, tzitzis is missing a yud 3 times, it then says, Vayalachem litzitzis, the lamid is 30, so that makes up the number. Okay, and there are other answers. He also points out something interesting, that the top third of the tzitzis is supposed to be tied, and the bottom two-thirds is not tied. He says that's similar to the mezuzah that's supposed to be, in other words, the holy part. It's supposed to be in the top third of the doorpost. That's where you put the mezuzah. Some Indian with that, but he doesn't explain. So besides that, he says that the higher thing is on top. He says it's also a remnant to the Jewish people that in Gullus, when we're all spread out, the bottom two-thirds are all mefuzarim. They're all spread out. That's around the bottom, but La Sadova will be on the top when we are all together. We will all be on top when Mashiach comes. One last point. He mentions the bracha on tzitzis. He says a big yesod over here. Others say similar things as well. We don't make a bracha, as we know, on all mitzvahs. We make a bracha on some mitzvahs. Such as, if you go and help your friend, you do Bikur Cholim, you don't make a bracha, Sherkin Shanim, Mitzvah, Tzivan, all Bikur Cholim, there's no such mitzvah. So all the Rishonim discuss when we do make brachas and when we don't. How did Chazal decide when we make a bracha and when we don't? The most famous is probably the Rashba, who says you don't make a bracha on a mitzvah of Adam L'Chaveru, because maybe he won't take it. you want to offer him stucca, maybe he won't take it, so there's no bracha on that. Anyway, so Rabbeinu Bechai here says that you don't make a bracha on a mitzvah that is a muskalos. Anything that you don't need Hashem to tell you to do it, and you should do it anyway, let's say tzedakah, or kibud aveim, anything that is not something you need Hashem to tell you. In other words, a person can figure out on their own that that's the way they should be. There is no mitzvah for that. Then there's no bracha, rather, for that. Of course it's a mitzvah. There's no bracha for it. When we say, Asher kiddishanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu, Hashem made us holy, separate from the others. That's only mitzvahs that are special that you could not figure out on your own that other people don't do, because it's not something that you would think of on your own. So, whatever that mitzvah is, like tzitzis, so that's when we make a bracha, because it's something that is minham muskalos. But he says, of course, all these mitzvahs that are muskalos, that we make brachas on, in other words, that are mekubalos, the ones that that one would not figure out on their own, those are the ones we make brachas on. So we're doing it with our physical bodies, but they're all, of course, connected spiritual things. And he says, the talis, when we wear a talis, so that's making, again, if you want to look up all the Kabbalistic things, you can look it up yourself. Just letting you know, he says when a person wears a talis, so that's obviously one of these mitzvot that Hashem told us, we wouldn't figure out on their own. And when you wear it, you're being doma to the Chayos HaKodesh. If you want to know, like I said, the details, you have to look it up yourself. It's more Kabbalistic. Okay.